So that
but
is
we know in Barbados that when people have more money in their pocket, they import more. So that means they spend more foreign currency.
That's the reason why it is important to protect the foreign reserve and to create policies that bolster the foreign reserve. And I'll go into greater detail to explain why the changing of the tax structure, particularly that which affects corporations, from one on profits to one on gross, will have the greatest impact on the foreign reserve. There's perhaps a lot of people don't know, but any businessman, medium or large businessman, will tell you that the vast majority of large business in Barbados pays little or no corporation taxes. As an example, in 1994, when Owen Arthur was in power, corporation tax revenues in Barbados were nearly $1 billion. Last year, total corporation tax revenues were $241.2 million in 2017. So you have a situation where in 1994 dollars, when our gross domestic product was nearly half of what it is today, corporation tax revenues accounted for almost $1 billion of that. And last year, corporation tax revenues in Barbados account for only $241.2 million. Where did the money go? Did the economy contract so that companies were suddenly not making a profit anymore, not paying taxes? No, the money went offshore. The money left Barbados and went to St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and other CARICOM nations where it is being tax sheltered. And I'm sorry, but this is a fact. And so part of changing the tax structure in Barbados is about ensuring that companies pay their fair share of taxes. And so you have a situation where last year, citizens of this country paid $469.8 million in personal income taxes. And corporations, all of the companies in Barbados combined, paid $241.2 million. Let me ask you, Sanka, do you think that is fair? That all of the profitable business in Barbados paid only $241.2 million in corporation taxes, and the citizens of this country paid $469.8 million? Yet in 1994, when Owen Arthur was in office, corporations were paying nearly $1 billion in taxes. Right. So the reason why that changed is that we have some of the brightest tax minds in the Caribbean, and they have allowed over time these companies to create tax sheltering structures that allow them to avoid corporation taxes. And so if businesses don't pay their fair share of taxes, citizens must make it up with things like VAT and NSRL. So by changing the way that corporations are taxed, which is what we are proposing to do, it means therefore that we can reduce or eliminate things like VAT and NSRL because the companies will pay their fair share. So this is the basic structure of why our tax system needs to be changed. Do you know that it is possible, Sanka, for instance, to set up an IBC in St. Lucia and run all of your expenses and income through it, generate all of your profits in St. Lucia and repatriate those profits to the Barbadian shareholders tax-free? And this is going on with almost every major company in this country.
And you're thinking about totally changing that.
We are going to change it so that everyone pays taxes fairly and
suppose,
equally.
How would you respond to the accusation that clearly Solutions Barbados is not business friendly then?
Well, we are very business friendly because what you have to understand is that when the economy benefits because of a change in structure, everyone benefits, not just the citizens, but businesses benefit also.
All right, sir. Mr. Neil Holder, Barbados Integrity Movement.
Yes, sir.
How are you going to make the difference to the economy? How are you going to improve it? What are some of your ideas, some of your solutions to making Barbados better?
Well, one of the most fundamental things in listening to all the arguments that have been put on the table so far is nobody's really talking about the management of the country, the management of the systems, and how we do business. Let's go right back, for instance, to sugar, agriculture. And we need to go back to agriculture because we've drifted away from that. And as has been mentioned before, we've become a consumerist state where we're buying everything. So we're taking the very sugar, the best there is in the world, and we are bulk packaging our sugar and sending it off to some destination. And at the end of the day...
But you know that has changed. Sorry, I'm really sorry to interrupt you here in your full stride because I haven't done it with anybody else. But that has been changing gradually. In fact, we have been able to... sell quite a bit of our sugar here. We also package it into different brands like Muscovado and a few others.
Yeah, but if you permit me to continue,
okay,
you would hear me get into that.
Mm-hmm.
We have been more or less throwing ourselves out there mm-hmm. on the international market with the best that we have for nothing. We should really be finding better ways to package what we have. So let's say we're starting with sugar. We take our sugar. We have enough entrepreneurs in Barbados that do several other things that we can brand it in several ways for export. So it doesn't leave here now, as you say, just the Muscovado and so on, but there are other things, even in the cottage industries, that we can brand as a nation to send worldwide. People come to Barbados, they tour the country, they have very little understanding of the correlation between sugar and rum. So they get to go to Mount Gay, they see, yes, we've got one of the oldest rums in the world, it's the best, etc. But where are we going with the sugar? Where are we going in terms of giving a productive sector the fresh wind under its wings, where we can then package products, not only just sugar product in terms of a package that we're sending out through the world, but we have other byproducts that the little ladies are making that we can actually turn into proper industries, structured, HACCP certified, so that when we are sending something from Barbados, somebody in Europe who would have visited here sometime before can see that product and say, well, I know this. This is Barbados. This is something that's synonymous to that country only. That's one side of it. Two, we have to also look at a country where when we as a government are issuing contracts and so on, now that it's not going to three or four entities that take hold of the entire market. So let's say, for instance, we are doing a construction project. We want to build 1,000 homes, and we find ourselves giving a contract to one person to do 1,000 homes. It does not really spread into the economy, because that person now, they're going to make some kind of preferential arrangement overseas to send money out there to buy furniture, fixtures, etc. from one supplier at a very preferential price. And their money is staying out there. In fact, we are hemorrhaging now because we're sending the foreign exchange out. If we have a contract to do 1,000 homes, and the government says, well, this 1,000 homes, we're going to divide up into 100 builders. Those 100 builders have to buy all that they can and demonstrate to us that all that they can that is being purchased is coming from manufacturers in Barbados first and foremost. If it can't be provided by a Barbadian manufacturer, show me someone else in CARICOM or the OECS that can supply it, first and foremost. These are the kind of exercises we need to put in place. We have to start looking at the fact that when we are manufacturing things in Barbados, we have to look at the imports that are coming in that are competing with us and structure our duty system to ensure that the local manufacturers are protected. That's not happening. That has not happened for some time now. Nobody is standing up for the small businesses in Barbados.
And the Barbados Integrity Movement intends to do that.
We are going to do
it. All right. Let's go to our phone line. Sorry to cut you off, but we got a number of calls. Welcome back. The People's Parliament is in session, and you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Sankar.
Thank you very much for holding. I know you held for a long time. Go right ahead with your questions,
gentlemen,
sir.
Of the panel, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning,
sir. Now, I have a problem with that, gentlemen. It is about time when we have these programs that we try to achieve a balance. Have some women on the program. I know it wasn't done intentionally, but let us make a determined effort to do that. The second thing, because this is relevant to what I'm going to say, I had gone on this program last time, and I had raised some very, at least in my opinion, very important points. But then at some point, I got cut off because the conversation got into the panel, and no one came back to me to ask me for my final comment. I wish that this would not happen this morning. Because the first thing I want to ask the members of the panel, each one a yes or no, is economics a social science? That's a yes or no answer.
Gentlemen, is economics a social science?
Yes.
Okay. That's your answer, yes? Yeah. Go right ahead.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah.
Good. Yes. I'm very glad about that.
That's correct, Pat.
There's a jingle, you know, about this economy and the society. Let us face this thing, gentlemen, that we cannot be discussing economics without looking at the social implications. Mm-hmm. For one thing, you know, we cannot predicate our development on selling off our prime land, the beach land, or giving it away virtually without any taxes whatsoever, and think that we're not going to have a social problem. This is something the economists must be very cautious about. Now, I've heard something said on this program that I have a problem with. One of the panelists said that we have always been an import-led economy. I beg to differ. Barbados was, when it began, was high on exports when sugar was king. Of course, the model has changed. Sugar is no longer king. And we have gone into something called tourism, which, gentlemen, I say, is an export industry. It brings in foreign exchange. So however you look at it, it is an export industry. The problem with it is that we have no real plan of how to channel the returns from this industry. In other words, foreign exchange is generated, but does it ever reach Barbados? Has anyone, including the person in charge of tourism, ever looked at this? Or are we going every year to hear, oh, we've had 15%. It's better than last year. The tourists are coming to the islands, no problem. But then you look at the reports from the central bank, and what do you see? Yes, that the foreign exchange has declined. Mm-hmm. These are issues that I would like the panel to address. The last one here is this question. Can we really, really attract decent investment here if our country has now degenerated to the highest corrupt country in the Caribbean? Can we really have decent investment? What you are going to get here is those charlatans who come in here to looking for deals that do not benefit the society. And this is what is happening in Barbados now. And that is something I would like the panel also to look at. And I would like to have a last shot after you've had your discussion. Thank you.
Well, all right, Bobby, sorry. Let me tell you two things. One, you made a mention about the panel. Just remember that the parties choose who they send, so we can't decide whether female or male is going to come. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I think if you have one more question, you just ask it very quickly, because we're going to put down from you, we're going to let the panel discuss it, but then we have to go to another caller. Okay, so you have one more question, ask it very quickly.
Yeah, this thing, a comment. This other economic principle that you invest, I heard someone saying you should earn foreign exchange by investing overseas. I say our focus should be on earning foreign exchange by having people come and invest here. In other words, you look at two or three areas rather than tourism that you can possibly channel your focus on. And then I think you will be on the right track, not by taking what little foreign exchange we've earned and invest it in somebody else's country. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you very, very much. Can we attract decent investment to our country at this time, given the credit rating, given what is happening? Anybody want to take this?
I'll take it. Obviously, the credit rating doesn't help, because obviously people want to be assured that the jurisdiction that they're investing in is relatively stable. Mm-hmm. Now, there are investments still available in Barbados. And it's the extent to which we attract the right kind of people who don't necessarily want to take advantage of the fact that we are desperate. And so what we've observed because of our credit rating is that people are able to come and say, look, we want the whole shop, simply because you're in a position where you're of desperation. Now, strategically, Barbados is always attractive foreign direct investment, and that's how we've been able to build out the development of this country. And there's nothing sinister about that. The reality, though, is that we have reached a stage now where, at which is where I have to disagree with the caller. Most countries will have some kind of sovereign wealth fund. And the sovereign wealth fund is designed specifically to make sure that you can participate in this global economy. And so to the extent now that we have to revisit some of the regulations with respect to foreign exchange and who accesses it, particularly on the national insurance side, is something that we're going to have to seriously consider going forward, because you cannot have a situation where the government is dictating to the national insurance what needs to happen to get a return on investment for every single Barbadian's welfare going forward. And so if, for example, we made a strategic decision that we were going to try to purchase this, let's say 1% of Microsoft, 1% of BP, 1% of some of the larger companies across the globe, it gives the national insurance the ability to earn foreign exchange, own some of these entities, and I'm just using that as an example. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that we now have to think about how do we use the resources that we have available locally and use the money, in a sense. Money got to work for you, as opposed to just sitting there, not necessarily doing anything, and the commercial banks just basically dictating what happens in terms of the return on those investments. Mm-hmm. So Barbados definitely can attract investments, and we certainly are out there trying to make sure that we can bring investment here when the people of Barbados make a determination.
All right.
But Ryan, if I can cut in here a minute, the issue here is not necessarily attracting investment. Most of the very prudent people who would want to invest, and some of them who've come here between the two administrations, would have left because the concept or the hidden secret about perceived corruption, where, you know, you come here with an extremely excellent project, and for whatever reason, you sit with the relevant authorities, and they can see the financial benefit of it for the country. But overarching that is the very thought that these people now are saying to themselves, well, if this project is going to be so good for you, what is in it for me? And this is something I've heard.
Who are these people you're referring to?
I'm referring now to some people that investors come to here to get permission, etc.
You're talking about currently?
Well, don't let us not deal with current, because they can start calling a few projects across the two administrations. But there are investors who've ended up going to St. Lucia and other countries because they came here prudently looking to invest to establish businesses that would have run successfully, but because of some politicians wanting to have their share, you know, these people are dissuaded from operating in Barbados. I've had not the privilege, but it was a dishonor, really, in speaking to someone who is in another jurisdiction, and they give me a full story of what has happened. So one of the things we have to do right now, first and foremost, outside of looking at credit rating, is also cleaning up the perception of corruption in Barbados. Mm. We have to deal with it. We can't tap dance around. And the Barbados Integrity Movement intends to bring that to a halt.
How you plan to do that? Well, very quickly, because I want to get back to the phone lines. How do you intend to deal with corruption? Because everybody keeps talking about they can do
first thing first, one of the things we're going to look at doing is removing parliamentary privileges. So every MP will have the same status as an ordinary citizen. So if you're found to be doing something that is not right, the DPP has the right to proceed with prosecution. I know we're talking about finances and we're drifting a bit, but we've got to correct and clean up the things that are causing us right now to be tainted. The other thing is, whenever we are having investors come in now, we have to ensure that these investors are not going willy-nilly all over the place to all the MPs, etc. There has to be some central ministry now for implementation that reports to the Prime Minister's office. So that is in itself one of the aspects. And we have to implement a Contractor General and Contractor General's office. We spoke about it, and then we heard the Barbados Labour Party say that they're considering it. And funny enough, Chris Sinclair did mention it sometime previous, but nobody seems to be really serious about doing that. Nobody seems to be serious about bringing integrity legislation in, and we are going to implement those ASAP.
All right, sir. We go back to the phone lines. Scott, I'll give you a chance. Let's go back to the phone lines first, because we have a lot of calls and I also want to deal with the WhatsApp messages. Go right ahead. You're on the air. It's 11:22. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, go right ahead with your question. Yes, good morning. Go right ahead with your questions. Stop listening to your radio.
I'm not listening to my radio neither. Am I making an appeal to the persons presently on the program? My situation is that I have a difficulty with most of these parties who are providing alternatives to the people of this country, right? And my difficulty is that they're not really tackling the problems that really concern the general man in the public.
So, sir, okay, if they're not doing that, I want you to be able, we have representatives from 40 political parties here. What specifically would you want them to talk about? Ask them right now.
My question is, what do they see as the major problem that has put us in this in this situation at present? Right? Because I have not really, over the period listening to them, right, come to a conclusion that they understand what affects the general public in this country. Right? And I would like them dearly to answer to that question. Because I have a very serious concern as to why we are where we are. And my concern is that people are talking and hinging all around the problems that they're not coming to the general situation as to why we are really where we are.
I think some of that has been dealt with already. Okay, here, I don't know if you were listening, because certainly everybody here made their statement as to why we are where we are right now.
I appreciate that.
Is there
that.
Any other question that you want to ask as
my,
well?
My thing about it is, right, I've been listening to this situation now for months and almost a year, and the major problem that has us in this situation, all the political parties, the two major political parties, and the ones that have sprung up in the last year or two, mm-hmm, have been hedging around.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you're really basically repeating what you said earlier. I was looking for you to ask something specific on some of the issue, but tell me, sir, by the way, what is your profession? I mean, is there something in particular you want to know? Are you a builder? Are you in manufacturing? Are you in into agriculture as a farmer?
You
have a specific concern?
I'm in manufacturing.
Uh-huh.
Right? My thing, my being into manufacturing doesn't relate to what is actually happening here.
I see.
Right?
All right. All right, well, sir. Okay, go ahead.
What I want to find out from these people who are presenting themselves as an alternative, right? What do they see the problem? And I want to say something, because I think the problem is, right, we have a major problem of corruption in this country. The people who are presently in charge, the people who have aspirations towards governance, do not seem to want to face it head on.
I see. All right, sir. We were just dealing with that corruption issue, and I just want you to keep listening, because these two issues that you have raised actually were spoken of a lot already for the morning. So just keep listening, because I'm sure they're going to come back again. We'll go to our next caller, because we have a whole full slate of calls. It's 11:28. Young Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Sanger.
Yes, good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I am well, and you?
All right, I can be very short.
But you usually are.
Yeah.
You're the quickie man.
I heard them talking about foreign, you need foreign exchange, or how to get foreign exchange in the year. Mm-hmm. But you know, nobody seems to look at the model of the own plantocracy system, where those people were dependent on their own, such as food. They bring the workers close to the plantations, so they don't have to look for transportation. But what is important that we, the people of this country, did not see or cannot see up to this day. You ever went around a plantation and saw many mahogany trees planted?
Yeah.
You know of a plantation. You know all the plantations have plenty of mahogany trees.
Yeah.
You know the reason for that?
No, you tell me.
That was the manufacture furniture. We use the cane that to grow. We have the resources. Why it is that this country cannot manufacture furniture of our own mahogany and export it? We have some of the best mahogany grown in the world. And instead of we bringing in a lot of inferior so-called wardrobes and all such like from overseas, why don't we, at this time where technology is being improved, that we should not have a manufacturing company sending out furniture to Japan and them sort of places, solid mahogany that people like to put in there? If you going old plantation, how you see the rails below the mahogany? I had the privilege going in more than one, and it's a beautiful sight. But no, we got the mahogany trees about here breaking down, dropping down in the road, and yet you are not looking at how we could export furniture. Huh? This is one of the things
that
we
want.
Do.
So do you want the panel? So do you want someone here?
Yeah, I would like to hear one of them say it. I can talk much more on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. Well, thank you. Mr. Hennessy, you want to deal with that?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sanko. What I hear coming from him is pretty much what I even hear coming from Neil, okay? And we started to shut off Neil a little bit regarding the sugar and everything. But really, I'll just get to the point. We're not known. What he's basically saying, innovation. Okay, and that's why when the previous caller called about the import-led operation, I'm talking when you look at it's visible imports in terms of containers. We bring in more containers and we ship out, and that's what the general trend here is. We're not really known as being an innovative nation, and it's a very critical thing, because if you look at the period 2008 to 2016, the Great Recession, what we just came through, that whacked our economy. It began December 2007. And we got whacked by it, so our economic growth declined. But there was a country, if you go to World Bank figures, they have what you call a measure of innovation, how innovative a nation is. And Israel is one of the highest. They basically take over 4% of their GDP, gross domestic product, and it's put into research and development. Well, Barbados declined by 2%. Israel's economy grew by as much as 47% between 2008 and now. So they rode out, they surpassed what was happening in the Great Recession. And the Great Recession was a serious thing. When Barbados got hit, we really were hit. Two of the largest bankruptcies happened at that time, worth in excess of $1 trillion. So if that sort of shockwave was reverberating across the world, we were not going to be immune from it. And that's what we are here today trying to recover from. So there's a link, a very strong link between innovation and economic growth. Barbados is not, that's why I said earlier when I started talking, we import our innovation. The general trend of the discussion here is basically saying we have to. And even though I was talking about steam and such, we're also talking about innovation. We have to innovate to grow. And we have to innovate to grow from an export perspective. And that's what they're all saying. We're pretty much agreeing on the same thing.
Well, if I can get in here, Neil Holder, Bruce, you're absolutely correct. And let us look, for instance, at our black belly sheep. We import millions of dollars of lamb from New Zealand on an annual basis. We have pretty much the best lamb in our black belly sheep that you find anywhere. We look at moving from just the meat product now to the skins. We've recently had a little research project done at UWE where they actually took the skin, sent it abroad, I think, to Italy or wherever it was, and shoes were made of some of the best quality. We have Temple Yard with the Rastafari movement down there doing some of the best crafts and everything you can get. But we confine them to Temple Yard and we have an empty Pelican Village. What sense does that really make? We don't have a tannery in Barbados anymore. There's nowhere to stretch hides in Barbados. So how can we look at homegrown things, very simple things that cost us virtually nothing, where we can export, send some of the best out of Barbados and generate foreign exchange? We get back to the concept also of the mahogany trees, as the caller said earlier on. We've got a project at Coverley, and I can call the name because all the things I will mention are factual. If you go into the kitchens at Coverley, they're all flat pack kitchens with a very cheap material that's made out of China. But we have manufacturers in Barbados who could have produced the same kitchens, maybe at a slightly higher cost. But look at the quality that you would get and the tenure that you will have of service with the product that you get in Barbados. All right, let's go back even now to the existing election campaign that is starting to build up. We have political parties importing t-shirts with their brands on them, and all the t-shirts, if you look at the colors, the same made in China. Nobody's saying we are going local to support local manufacturing. So if we have to talk, these are the real conversations we have to bring to the table. We have to start talking about the fact that we have so much talent in Barbados, but we overlook this talent to go and bring things from other economies into ours, but we cannot ship anything we have to theirs. And we need a leader now in this country who's going to stand up and say enough is enough. We don't care about trade agreements or anything if we have to stand up for what we believe here in this country. And if we have to renege on some of those trade agreements at whatever cost to ensure that Barbados is for Barbados, then we have to do it.
But you see what is happening with the United States right now with that sort of attitude. I mean, it is easy. It sounds good, but this sounds like a rum shop discussion.
But it's not a rum shop discussion. We have to look at the fact that there's several Barbadians right now.
If you are going to seriously look at me and tell me we're going to tear up agreements, okay, trade agreements, okay, you cannot be serious. We gone to a different level. I'm just a lower level.
Okay, let me bring home another point very closely.
I'm going to let you go and develop that point later, but right. I'm going to get one more call in before we take a break.
Proceed.
Okay. You're on the air. Good morning.
Mr. Price?
Yes, you are in the air. Good morning.
Yeah, you're Mr. Ryan Strawn earlier stated that, and he confidently stated this too, that the government still printing money unrestricted, doing nothing to reduce the dependency on the central bank finance of government's expenditure. I want him to explain to me in the latest central bank report this statement. The central bank funding fell to 96.8 million compared to 714.5 million for the corresponding period of fiscal year 2016-2017, while lending by the private non-bank institution fell by $82.3 million. What that means, Mr. Strawn?
I'm glad you asked the question, sir. Now, let me just make it abundantly clear. Do not mistake the fact that they said that the new printing was only $70 million is the be-all and end-all.
96.
The cumulative impact of the central bank's printing of money, which is now equivalent to close to $2 billion or more, is the primary reason that we're having a situation where the foreign reserves are decreasing at the rate that they are. And so to the extent that the point I was making earlier, with the crisis element, which is to preserve the stability of the exchange rate, that is of primary importance. Yes, they made a shift, and they forced now the commercial banks, which is incidentally, ordinary Barbadians deposits now to take up government securities. They made it mandatory, and so to the extent now that they've shifted from central bank financing now to commercial bank financing still does not resolve the problem, because at the end of the day, hold on, sir. At the end of the day, the government in of itself has not addressed its own internal problem. So if you're going to shift the financing element from the central bank, and as I said, the cumulative impact is there, that money is still circulating in the economy because it's cumulative. And so to the extent that the problem with respect to the maintenance of the peg is still there. And so therefore you have to deal with that.
Oh, is that clear? No, it is not clear.
It's not clear.
It is as clear as mud. Listen, the transfer.
Hold on a minute. When it's stated earlier that there's certain economic fundamentals that are required in the economy, you can't tell me that it's as clear as mud when I'm just trying to explain to you that the ways that you're going to finance government's operations is threatening the monetary stability. Now, I just want to be clear here. The central bank's printing of money, the cumulative impact, is the problem. So even if the central bank only prints $5 tomorrow, it's added, that's $5 in addition to whatever is printed before, which is creating the problem. And so therefore, we have to remedy that as a matter of urgency, sir.
But you don't think that the falling of the dependency on the central bank from 714.5 million to 96.8 is going in the right direction?
I'm suggesting to you, sir. I'm suggesting to you.
Yes or no? Is it no, going on, in the right
on.
Direction?
Hold on. Going in the right direction. Hold on, sir. Sir.
A lot of economic mumbo jumbo.
No, sir. I want you to understand. Going in the right direction suggests. Because you are taking the fact that they only printed 96 million as a positive thing, which it may very well turn out to be. But the reality is that it has to be much more aggressive than that. Because at the end of the day, we now have less than 4 weeks of import cover.
Well, we all know that. But we are saying that some positives are actually happening within the economy.
Sir,
and you
sir,
can't,
sir.
You're refusing to admit that.
No.
Why don't you admit it?
No, let me just make it clear. Just short of a year ago, we had 12 weeks of import cover. We now have 4.
You're going back to that again?
No.
We all know that.
Hold on. We now have less than 4. And so the reality is of the situation is you have to address the central bank's printing of money.
But is that not a positive, what I just point to you?
That we only have 4 weeks of reserves? That's a positive?
No, I'm not talking about that. You see, that is the narrative which you have been trying to pursue.
Sir, the central bank has continued to print money, which has led to the decline in the foreign reserves. It's as simple as that.
But the printing of money is going in the right direction. It is being reduced.
Sir, you are printing. You are still printing money. That is the point.
No. You are still. You want to say home people,
sir,
Mr. John,
sir.
You and your party want to say home people.
Under the Barbados Labour Party, the central bank never printed money, and nobody went home. So don't tell me, sir. Do not tell me that all of a sudden. Excuse me, sir. Hold on. No. It is not. It is not as simple as that. The central bank of Barbados has a critical role to maintaining the economic stability of this country, and I'm saying to you, sir, that the central bank of Barbados has to stop printing money.
And that is where they are going. Are they not going in that direction?
Sir.
By reducing it by over $600 million?
Reducing is not the same as stopping.
All right, but I think we have exhausted that discussion there. The fact about the matter is that it has been reduced, and that's what you're looking for.
And so too is the level of the foreign reserves.
Right. And so we I think we've exhausted that. We have to take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back, and don't forget our call numbers are 434-1790 and our WhatsApp is 266-4862. We'll go to the WhatsApp. Good morning. I have listened a few times to some of the solutions proposed by the Barbados Labour Party, like complete reversal of the NSRL, return to free university education, VAT return to 15%, increased salaries for civil servants. This creates a gap of around $600 million annually. My question is, how will this be financed? What is your position on going to the IMF, devaluation and retrenchment? Mr. Ryan Strawn.
All of the policies that the caller would have alluded to there would have been one that would have been consistent with growing the economy over the 14 years that the Barbados Labour Party would have been in office. The removal of the NSRL specifically will immediately lower the cost of living for every single Barbadian and every household in this country. And that is of primary importance because at the end of the day, we need to get growth in the economy and to get things going again. Now, with respect to the how it's going to be financed, the reality is that there's a principle. I mean, I heard someone made reference to it earlier. The reality is that money has to circulate in the economy, and the government has made every attempt over the last 10 years to make things hard for every single Barbadian. And if it's a policy that is not conducive to generating growth, we shall remove it. It is as simple as that. Every introduction of tax measure over the last 10 years has led to a deterioration of growth opportunities in this country. And so therefore, we are under no illusions of that. When we reverse the NSRL, that growth will continue. Well, sorry, growth will come after a few months, because obviously there will be a lowering of revenue in the short term. But as things start to gain some momentum, that will happen. As it relates to university education, again, that is one of the key measures that with respect to getting the capacity, because someone raised the question earlier about whether or not we have the skills available in the country. And the reality is it's not just the university, but it's really the tertiary education system that's key. Now,
and this would help Mr. what we're talking about, STEM, in terms of innovation and whatnot.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to make it abundantly clear here, because it's a point that's often missed. The financing of these things, the government already has its budget set. It's how you're spending the money. And our policies will be consistent with, as I said, with generating output. And so therefore, we are not just going to say, come to work just to say that you're at work. You actually have to produce something to be paid. And that is where we see the difference in terms of allocation of expenditures. But I just want to make one key point here. The government has embarked on a path or a course of action, as I should say, that prior to 2008, any government department that would have had accommodation would have been in the National Insurance buildings or what have you at about $10,000 a month, right? And since the government changed in 2008, you had a series of government departments that somehow or the other could not afford to pay the NAS $10,000, but somehow found it convenient to be able to go into private accommodation and pay as much as $30,000 to $50,000 a month. Now, you can do that for 1 year, and it wouldn't have much impact on the rest of the public finances. But if you do that over the course of 10 years, then it means that the cumulative impact of the monies that you have available now it becomes a problem. And so therefore, the reversal of the university fees and all of these things that we are talking about is looking at how government is spending its existing money and making sure that all of that is rationalized in the context of the budget.
So you're talking about rationalizing efficiency in the whole thing.
Such that you can't tell me that I'm going to pay a private person $50,000 a month in private accommodation and then tell university students or anybody or the garbage or there's no garbage trucks and all these things that you're not going to provide these services because you want to change the accommodation of government. With respect to the IMF,
right, that's the one I want to get.
The Barbados Labour Party has always said that when we get to government and we have a true assessment as the lay of the land, as far as the government is concerned, we will come to the people and we let the people know what we will do in that respect. However, the plan with respect to how do we address the crisis situation at the moment is not an IMF function. The reality is that we have issues on the South Coast that we have to deal with immediately. We have issues with respect to roads that we have to deal with also immediately. And to the extent that, as I said, the complete rationalization of government's budget in terms of the priority areas, because regardless of whether you go to the IMF or not, these are things that have to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. The next thing is the valuation. I've already made it quite clear. The Barbados Labour Party, on assuming office, if that's the will of the people, will move very swiftly to make sure, as I said, the central bank will stop printing money, one, and we will then move to the other measures that we will implement to ensure that we can get some foreign direct investment and new foreign investment coming into this country in order to remedy the situation where the central bank is hemorrhaging foreign reserves. As it relates to what was the last one?
Last one's retrenchment.
Retrenchment. The Barbados Labour Party has always provided pro-growth policies, and so therefore it's never been a feature of any of the of the administration of the Barbados Labour Party. So our policy is always about growth and making sure that people have the opportunity to participate in any specific divestment that may obtain, and that's been our position.
Okay.
It remains so.
The question from Mr. Neil Holder now from the Barbados Integrity Movement. What is your party's plan to get Barbados out of the high debt, high deficit, low growth scenario? What is your party's growth strategy? You also need to say how BIM intends to earn and boost Barbados's foreign reserves.
Okay, beautiful. Number one, as we said, first thing first, we have to deal with the issue of perceived corruption, because there are several entities out there who want to make legitimate investments in the country, but they're concerned with this. Two, we need to look at more homegrown approaches to dealing with the manufacturing sector and other local sectors that we have in Barbados that are currently starving. Three, we have to sit down and structure a new look at the way government functions. Number one, we have to eliminate the whole concept of government after government inheriting permanent secretaries who would have represented the interests of a particular government, and then when the next one comes in, these people are not very much in support of the other ones, etc. We want to look at going in the direction of establishing chief operating officers, where the permanent secretaries now become chief operating officers, and ministries are not run by MPs.
I need to cut you right here, right now.
We cannot behave as though we don't know what is going on.
Yeah, but no,
I have to operate with the knowledge that I have, fine, and not outside of
that. And I understand that, and I respect that. But what I'm saying to you is that permanent sector, you're making certain assumptions, and you're casting certain aspersions, okay? Which I can't allow to go on. Uncontested. The reality is that Barbados has been served well by our permanent secretaries.
And let me finish.
Permanent secretaries change. They go and come, and they serve well, and they've served a number of administrations. So if you're talking about change, that are you then suggesting that one, because you're changing now the whole terms of reference. That's what you're saying. So are you going to say, then put all their jobs up?
But Sanka, if you permit me to explain it, the Barbadian public will hear where I'm going with the plan. But you're not doing that.
But I want to focus.
You're seeking to say what I want to say, and let me say what I have to.
I'll give you a little rope, but you're ready.
If we are going to restructure what we are doing as a country, we have to take away those elements where a minister can inject or impose his will over that of what the governance model is. If we are putting structures in place where we have permanent secretaries now functioning as chief operating officers on performance basis bonuses, where that person who's at the top of the ministry is responsible for that ministry performing, meeting targets, etc., even down to the maid. So as I always tell people, if the passport authority now in the future has to produce 500 passports per month, and you're able to do that, then retroactively every 3 months, there's a bonus payment. Number one, it gives the lower level of government the opportunity to say we are part of a process now that is working, and they want to be there. Everybody's there on time, 8 o'clock in the morning. Nobody's taking a coffee break till 10 o'clock then to start working. There's a lot of hemorrhaging going on at government level that we seem not to pay attention to. We have a lot of SUVs doing messenger work when we could take the current structure that we have and place it into the postal service to do an express delivery. All of these are things we need to look at. We want to bring new buses into Barbados when we can take the existing buses and retrofit them here, having 10 or 15 operators doing that process for us and creating jobs.
And that way we can save some foreign exchange.